Greetings and welcome to Baron Craze's Visions of Horror, episode 5, or for you out there playing this game, it's week 5, January 29th to the February 4th, a show that tells you what I saw in horror and give you a little feedback for each film. Always trying to review all these movies, but let's face it, right now if you're playing along, you're looking at somewhere just maybe near about 40 movies have been watched. And there's no way I can sit down and actually review 40 films. Second thing is, I know what you're going to think. But Baron, if you watch the movie on Saturday, why are you now putting out the show on Monday? Well, it's really, really easy. Let me try to explain this. First, let me state that this will be very simple understanding to the authors and the screenwriters especially, but also to editors and songwriters. And what that is, have you ever been working, you get finished, you go to bed, you wake up maybe 4 to 6 hours later, and it hits you, whatever your writing block was, or whatever you've been doing, it hits you. And you go, I'm going to write. And you just go into writing mode, okay? That's exactly what happened to me. So, just to kind of give you an understanding, I'm working on a screenplay, a horror screenplay to be exact. So I got that going on. I'm working on 2 nonfiction horror books. So I got those projects. And then I have a collection of short stories. And in this entire situation, it had the thoughts just flowing into my mind about everything at once. So to set it up even more detail for you, on the second floor of my home, there's my main bedroom. Now, I don't have any other people in the house except for a few friends, and they were all basically sleeping it off downstairs. So I went across the hall to another room, which is called the chamber, and that's my home office. And across from that, or next door to the main bedroom, is a room called the crypt. And the crypt is basically where I was. And in the crypt, it has basically all the music, record player, all these kind of things, right? Soundtracks and metal bands for the most part. Then there's a books, probably about at least 500 plus books, nonfiction and horror fiction. There are comic books and there are horror magazines. There are even some old news clippings that are in there for various reasons. So this is all kind of in the crypt, and that's where I have a laptop set up, and I go there, and this laptop only does one thing for me. It allows me to write. I don't have it connected to the net. I don't have it connected to anything else. It's just there for me to sit down and write. I got a stack of notepads next to me. I got all kinds of pens and markers and post-its of different colors, everything. So I can sit there, I can storyboard something out, I can play around with it, everything you can think of. It's all right there. In fact, this room also contains, just like the chamber does, a Keurig, a one-shot where I can pour water in and make a cup of tea if I wanted to. You know, if it's really cold, and this past weekend it was brutal. And then I even have a one-shot kind of a grinder so I can make really fresh coffee, if you would. It's all right there. Plus, I got a little mini fridge, if you would. A corkscrew. Bottles of wine. So, yeah. That room, in a way, mirrors the chamber, except the chamber's a little bit different. It's set up for more business, internet, and everything else. So, it works a little bit differently there. Why am I telling you all this? I'm telling you all this because what happened was, instead of going across the hall to the chamber to get the show done, to get all my information for the last 2 movies I watched, which I watched on late Friday night, and then I watched the other one on Saturday morning, I just basically went right into groove mode on writing. And if you have ever felt yourself that way, you don't stop. You're locked in this room, and all you're doing is working. Everybody else is, like I said, sleeping off downstairs or doing whatever. No one's really putting the piece together of where the hell is Baron and what the hell is going on. I just started working. And people would tell me, hey, you got to do the Visions of Horror show. Don't forget. Well, It wasn't that I forgot. I just got into such a groove. And I just started working. And working and working and working. And I must have worked for basically 24 hours straight through. Sunday hits. I say, all right, I got to get some sleep. And I leave the crib and I go back to the bedroom. And I say, okay, when I wake up, I will go over and I will get the show done. 4 hours later, I wake up. Do I go back to the chamber to get the show loaded? No. Why? The groove is still there. Still in gear. Still feeling it all flowing through the brain pan. And I'm going, I just got to write. I just can't stop writing. I've got to get back to it. I've got to do it. So, by the end of the day, it's over. You know, the weekend's done. And I'm like, uh-oh, I didn't get the show done. So here I am on Monday, admitting to my F up, admitting that, hey, here we go. We're going to have this show. And I realize, okay, I got to record in the other things. They're done now. And here's a new intro. So forgive me all. I do want to state that our episode number 6, I will only tell you this now. I've been very transparent. I have 2 medical kind of appointments coming up on Tuesday and Thursday, which are going to basically knock me out of getting some time to watch some movies those days. So next week we'll only be covering 5 films of everything that went on. So just kind of give you the heads up. Otherwise, please enjoy this show. And just to let you know also, we had Ground Meat playing the opening track for a show, which was Pathological Silence. Their band is found on Facebook and Bandcamp. So hopefully you like that. Like the Horror Times on Facebook and Baron's Crypt, which is going to have a new show going off this Friday coming up. It will be a big show because we'll be celebrating our anniversary. A lot of news things will be in there too. A lot of things are going on, so be sure to listen into that. Otherwise, enjoy the show. I know it sounds really effed up what I did. All right. So something you guys didn't enjoy from the previous couple weeks that we've been doing the show is you like to have a band and a track somewhat associated with the day or the movie that's playing. So that's what I've incorporated. And obviously by playing a band called the Fuck Off and Dies band with the track Merry Fucking Christmas, obviously the movie was a Christmas horror movie, which I watched on January 29th, Sunday. I know what you're thinking, Baron, what the hell are you doing? Well, believe it or not, Christmas horror movies get released all throughout the year. Why? I don't know. I really honestly don't know what they were thinking when they released this movie. This was a film that did come out. It actually came out on January 30th of 2003, excuse me, in France. That's where his first place was released. So, yeah, there you guys go. I know it's completely weird. But, so the movie was Dead End from 2003, like I said, rated R, an hour and 25 minutes long. If you're following along on the Horror Times, you've already gone to your podcast section, you found the script, and you're set. The film is obviously celebrating an anniversary, 20 years. The genre for it is an adventure horror mystery. Now, once again, I have the Google Translator as my assistant to help me out with getting names right and such. So instead of me butchering them all over the place, this next two people were both the directors and writers to this particular movie.
Jean-Baptiste Andrea, Fabrice Canepa.
And there you go. Now, the film starred Ray Wise, Lynn Shea, Mick Kane, Alexandra Holden, and Amber Smith. The film was put out by Fox Path, which was for United Kingdom, 2003. It wasn't released into the United States until 2004. The summary of the film? All right, here we go. Christmas Eve. On his way to visit his in-laws with his family, Frank Harrington decides to try a shortcut. For the first time in 20 years, it turns out to be the biggest mistake of his life. So we already know a couple horror cliches are going into that. We'll get them in just a moment. On the Internet Movie Database, it's got a 6.5 out of 10. Tagline for the film is, "Read the Signs." A little trivia note here. This movie was a smash hit on the home media market, earning I can't believe this. This is like insane. 77 million. That can't be right. I think it means 7.7 million by DVD sales, because that just doesn't make any sense that that would be the right price income on it. But that's what they said. So I'm thinking somebody has forgotten to put a decimal point into it, because it doesn't make any sense. There's no way a film earned that much in DVD sales. I think it made $7.7 million. And it's not something I can go out and verify. So let's just go with my number instead of theirs. All right? Because if it made what somebody is trying to put down here is $77 million, then the thing would have generated somehow, I don't know how they would have done it, but they would have done it, a sequel. And they did it. So it didn't happen. All right? Okay. Basically, again, we got some horror cliches going on here. We've got a family car ride here. Well, we know that's never good, right? We've got a shortcut route being taken, first time in 20 years. And then, of course, saying it's the biggest mistake of his life. We already know, right? So, this is a road trip movie from hell, right? We know it. I mean, anybody who's ever gone on a road trip with family knows that it's usually not going to work out well. I mean, it didn't work out well for the Griswolds. I mean, there's always something going wrong, right? I mean, it doesn't work out with the friends and everything on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which, by the way, for oddly reasons here, I'm wearing that shirt. So there you go. That's from Fright Rags. And, you know, so I don't understand. Car rides with a lot of people never seem to work out. Anyway, they are out for to go see the relatives. Spend the night and getting caught up in a nightmare that won't end. So kind of like a time loop going on in a way. Obviously, this is something almost right out of the pages of Twilight Zone. We've all seen this movie before, played out in different ways. A little bit of Carnival of Souls is probably playing out here too. The movie gets right into it, you know. There's really no wasted time setting up everything. You learn as you drive along, so to speak. And then the movie starts going off the rails. Off the rails in this sense, as in the visions and different things the family experiences. Not off the rails as in yawn and scratch and moan of, you know, oh, this. You know, Ray Wise and Lynn Shea, they carry the film. They bicker back and forth like an old married couple. I mean, they are that way. The kids are annoying. Let's face it. They are. They always are. They will never not be that way. But the parents, they carry it. And that's something I liked about the film. It didn't just go, with let's just talk about the kids and forget the parents, which is often done with a lot of movies out there. You know, oh, who cares about them? So with that being said, look, you can find the film on Freevee, which is like the Internet Movie Database's way of watching it, Plex, and Tubi. And this is a film I'm hoping to come back to when, you know, Christmas rolls around again and review it then. I just don't feel comfortable maybe doing it now. There is a film, I will just kind of throw it out there, called Christmas, Bloody Christmas. I'm hoping to get that review out soon. I think that probably will be my last Christmas movie for the season. Just something I got left over from the previous month. Actually, from December of 2022. So, you know, you'll see that on the site soon enough. All right. So, hey, we're going to be playing another track right now, and that's going to be Gene and the Grave Robbers with Of Gods and Monsters. Well, welcome to January 30th, Monday. All right, so you guys just heard Gene and the Grave Robbers of Gods and Monsters. Well, basically, I should also state that today I've just gotten back from seeing the movie Fear which I think actually came out and technically was made in 2022 and just got its release. It's an okay movie. It's nothing great. Right now, my thought process on it is ranking up at about a 4 out of 10 for that movie. But maybe we'll get to that one another time. Maybe I can get a review done for it. I don't want to talk too much about it because it's not one that's out in theaters right now. And number two, it's not where I'm going to be focusing our attention. I'm focusing our attention on a film called Deep Rising that came out in 1998. It was rated R, about an hour and 46 minutes long. It's got an anniversary, 25 years. Genre for it is an action-adventure horror movie. Really, I would like to call this more of an action horror. It's a rarity we get in the in our field of vision, if you would. So it's sometimes nice to have it. The director and writer was Steven Sommers. And it starred Trent Williams, Kevin J. O'Connor, Derek O'Connor, Anthony Heald, Farmke, that's F-A-M-K-E, Jensen, Wes Studi, and Clifton Powell. Now, it was put out by Bona Vista Pictures Distribution. The summary for this film is a group of heavily armed hijackers board a luxury ocean liner in the South Pacific Ocean to loot it, owing to basically do battle with a series of large-sized tentacle man-eating sea creatures who have already invaded this ship and are still just looking around for some morsels to munch on. This film got a 6.1 out of 10. The release date, again, official here, was for January 30th of 1998. Some taglines for it. We got four of them. Here we go. This ain't no pleasure cruise. All right. Women and children first. You're next. See here. Full scream ahead. Okay. Doesn't really work too well, but all right. They seize the world's richest ship, but no one's left on board. Okay, I get what you're trying to tell us, but you took the longest way of getting there. You know, just, there you go, right? You could have said, all you could eat buffet. That would have been one. I like that one. That's Mayan. All you can eat buffet. That kind of gives you a thought going with, well, see, cruise ships are known for buffets. And something's on the ship and it says, all you can eat buffet. So again, you know, that to me really means a lot. You got the sea creature on there eating everybody up, right? And there you go. Now, the budget for the film was $45 million. Grossed, and this is pretty bad here, it grossed about $11.2 million. So, in other words, it tanked at the box office. Big time. A little trivia for you. Kevin J. O'Connor, who some also kind of recall from his hilarious horror film, Flight of the Living Dead, which came out in 2007, added the line where he asks if a person can suddenly get asthma. It's just a little comical line thrown in there, and yet it works. It's just, you know, something that breaks the tension for a brief moment. The film went over a year in post-production because it took a while to figure out exactly how they were going to do the various special effects for the monsters. So basically what they were doing was a lot of CGI work and not a lot of he was a special effects talent. If you remember the film It Came from Beneath the Sea, I mean, that's not CGI back then, that's just puppetry and different things. So, you know, it's sad you made a movie and you didn't know how you were going to do the special effects for the film until afterwards. Oh, whoa, that doesn't make any sense. That's like saying, listen, we're going to build this car. We're going to build 100,000 of these cars. They're going to cost $45 million with all the R&D and everything else. Wow. And then we're going to get the engines in them. But we have no clue how we're putting the engines in yet. So we'll figure that out after we build the cars. Huh? Wait a minute. What? The engines doesn't fit the car you put the car into, but hey, you spend the money and do it anyway. What are you doing? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, it just doesn't. But hey, it is what it is. Summers was grateful for people buying the Blu-ray, as watching it edit on TV, as he would state often enough, the TV would actually edit out 30 minutes to allow for commercials. And, you know, he said, it's good for my pocketbook, but it makes me cry sometimes. You know, Stephen, if I could say it for a moment, you don't have to say your pocketbook. You could have just used the words my wallet. Now you got people thinking that Stephen is walking around out there with a pocketbook. It's, you know, I get what you're trying to say. You know, the adage that people vote with their pocketbooks or things. Yeah, I get it. But you could say that people are just voting with their wallets because, let's face it, a woman has a wallet. A guy has a wallet. A woman has a wallet. You know, they have wallets. That's just how you do things, right? You don't have to use the term pocketbook. So that's a little of a weird statement there. But anyway, this film, the reason it tanked so badly, goes back to when the producers and production company, or really I should say the distribution company, released the film. You see, Titanic was just recently released, about a month before this film came out, and was cleaning up the box office. So again, you have here a drama type of movie that's got a romantic angle, and it's going to then be taking everything over in the seafaring world, and now you bring in Deep Rising. And what happens? The monster couldn't beat the other film. When did this also happen in horror movie history? That's right. You know it. E.T. gets released, then they put out The Thing, and The Thing tanks. Doesn't anyone learn? Doesn't anyone figure it out going, gee, we shouldn't do this way? Here's another thing. When they were making this film, they balked at the water tank they used at one of the studios, saying that it would cost $200,000. So they said, no, we're not going to do that. We can get one for about $80,000 up in Canada. So they went up to Canada. And basically what happened was the damn tank failed with all the water and such, and it caused about $600,000 worth of damage. So you spend an extra $400,000, not including the transportation, the time, the moving of everything, up to this place and have this. Now, you got to figure, yeah, they had insurance and everything, but that's not going to help you in the now moment. That's going to come later on. Anywhere from 30 days of investigation to 2-3 years later when they finally send you the check for all the damages. Whoop-dee-doo, how late can you get there? So, there was that also. Now, as for my thoughts on this film, by the way, we watched it on a Blu-ray. What we have here is an underrated action horror flick. Now, is it a great film? No, it's not a great film. Does it have a really cool script? Not really. It's a little silly in parts. Does it have phenomenal acting? Hey, some films are better, some are worse. This is just what it is. The effects were good. The characters, they were likable for the most part. Even the hijackers, right? The creature is interesting. But, it, you know, it's basically an expensive B-movie. I mean, this is the kind of film that you can just imagine if you had Roger Corman making it. What he would have done with $45 million, and most likely he would have really done some interesting things. But the film has the special effects, and that's what makes the film work, I guess. The plot is definitely cliche. There's no question about it. But again, what are you going to do? You're either going to enjoy it or you're not going to enjoy it. So with that being said, hopefully you guys enjoy what I told you to watch for your Monday there. Maybe you guys will go back and watch these movies. I hope you are, because some of you have already told me through emails and messengers and different things that you enjoy this new show. So I am thankful for that. And tomorrow there will be another movie. So we've played there a band called 5 Cent Freak Show with the track Demon That's Inside. They are found on Twitter, Facebook, Bandcamp, and 5centfreakshow.com. Well, welcome to our January 31st, last day of the month, and it is a Tuesday. Film that I guess people around the house is kind of like a we that come in and out. Anyway, it was a film called Phantoms from 1998. It is rated R. It's an hour and 36 minutes long. So, it's an anniversary film, obviously, 25 years. And it is, let's see here, genre is horror, sci-fi, and thriller. It was directed by Joe Chappelle and written by Dean R. Koontz. And you're curious, that's K-O-O-N-T-Z. These films stars Peter O'Toole, It's M-C-G-O-W-A-N. Joanna Going, Liev Schreiber, Ben Affleck, Nikki Catt, and Clifton Powell. I know, if you remember, yesterday we had Clifton Powell in a film. So there we go. Look at that. Just coincidental. Just happened to be the next movie in line. Company that put it out was Dimension Films. Summary is, in the peaceful town of Snowfield, Colorado, something evil has wiped out the entire community. And now it's up to a group of people to stop it, or at least get out of Snowfield alive. Film got a 5.4 out of 10. Release date was officially for this film January 23rd, 1998. Now, as for a couple taglines, here we go. We have three of them. First is Fear Underground. All right. For centuries, they told us the terror would come from above. We've been looking the wrong way. All right, and the last one. This time terror comes from below. This time terror comes from below. All right, 6 words, but that second one is totally no good. Because let's go over it again. For centuries, they told us the terror would come from above. We've been looking the wrong way. Folks, That is 17 words too damn long. 17. 17 words. What did I tell you the rule was? The rule is simple. You want to go for 3. 5 is maximum unless you're going to put in a word like the, of, or from. Any of those words, you can buy yourself a bonus one more word title. Now, why did they say that second title there? They always told us the terror would come from above. Okay. If you go with the science fiction films, the danger, the terror, it's going to come from another world. It's coming from outer space. It's, you know, it's coming from there. In addition, we could also go with civilization being wiped out. Well, this is now kind of suggesting bombs or missiles coming inbound. Not like if a bomb or a missile came in town, you would have time to kiss your ass goodbye. You wouldn't have time to do anything. That thing is going to explode over your head. You know, it's just what's going to happen. But yeah, the second one just doesn't work very well for me. Now, for our horror audience out there, there's a person who's in this film who has an uncredited role. She's the woman in room 204. It's Linnea Quigley. That's right. She's uncredited. I mean, she's in this film, though. The final scene in which, how should we discover that the monster is still alive. You know, okay. The way they did it, do you know what film they were going with? The Howling. This is basically where we get the bad guy showing up at the end of the film, or in Howling was the very evil woman. And we know that things are not all done just yet. So that final scene is a send-up to The Howling. Now, the film also uses the flatworm theory. Now, I know you're saying, what the hell are you talking about, Baron? Flatworm theory. Don't you know your biology? If not, I mean, I have probably at least one book on this topic, or have some paperwork on it. Again, these are times where I see these things and I start to put together a weird scientific little laboratory of information. Anytime I use as a theory or something else, I'm out there buying a book, or I'm out there finding information on different theories. So I'm going to kind of break this one down a little bit for you all out there. The theory that they're using in the film is that flatworms can eat the remains of their own kind and absorb their knowledge. Understanding, it's a worm, so knowledge is limitation here, okay? It's not going to go out there and give you the answer to differential quantitative mathematical problems. It's not going to do that, right? Now, these were kind of based on actual tests that were given to flatworms involving seeing how quickly they can make the correct turn at a Y intersection after eating the previous victim, if you would. And basically, the results were kind of inconclusive than the film likes to say. So, while that didn't work out too well, if you would, the film is trying to say something else. So, it's just a theory that, you know, it doesn't work too well. Now, what makes it interesting is how disgusting it sounds and everything I just mentioned. And really, if you think about it, if you test it, just to say you took 10 of these worms, you kill 10, and the other 10 come through and do this. Well, really, all you're doing, sadly to say, is you're flipping a coin in your head. Either it knew to go to the left or it went to the right. Well, that doesn't really tell you if it was smart. It either chose one direction over the other. You know, I mean, now if all 10 said, found the body of their friend, died on the right or left path, and whatever they died on, they went the opposite way. Okay, you've got something there. But to say that it knew which way to go because of some... No, I'm sorry. I mean, look, are there insects and different things out there that do have intelligence? Of course, ants are one of them. Ants are fantastic at this. They realize that if there is a battle occurring, if there's a flood of water coming in, they know to collapse their tunnel system, sacrifice a lot of the colony, and protect the queen. Just they know how to do it. No problem. If they were looking for a food source, they send out a scout. Scout goes out. Now, if the scout doesn't come back, they send another one out to look for the previous scout and to find the food. If that one doesn't come back, they're not sending a hell of a lot more because otherwise, well, two went out, they never came back, and that's not going that direction again. Good plan. Because they know that something's either killing them or they're having a jamboree good time doing something else. So, there you go. All right, I guess enough about the buggy thing. This film does reference the movie The Thing and also The Blob. And it grossed $5.6 million. So, not great by any means, but I guess it maybe made back its budget. So, basically, how do I feel about this film? Live Schreiber in this movie, if he was going for the creep factor, he nailed it. He nailed it. He's as creepy as the damn creature in the movie. Maybe a little bit more. I mean, he's truly effed up in the head. There's no question about it. Some people do say this is like an unofficial remake of the Hammer's film, X the Unknown. Maybe not. Maybe not. It does play off a lot to me of Village of the Damned, though. I mean, I find it to be in that vein. But, you know, that's just me. But I'm really leaning to that particular movie as some sort of influence upon this movie. The Phantoms is surprisingly an effective monster movie. Definitely the first half of it. It takes a little time to get going. But, you know, you think about it this way. I want to kind of set you in this tone, if you would. You're in a car. You're with your sister, your brother, your mother, your wife, your lover, whatever, right? And you arrive at a town that you know very well, your hometown. And when you pull up, everybody's gone. I mean, they're gone. You can't find anybody. And then as you start searching through it, you do find on a bed basically a lot of internal things that you wouldn't think you should ever find. I mean, creepy things, right? So, you know, I know what I would have done. You know what you would have done. There's pretty good chance that you would have just gone with, all right, let's get back in the car and let's go. And if the car didn't start, I know this sucks. Car's not starting? No. Uh-huh. What are we going to do? It's easy. Let's get the hell out of town. Just go. Grab your shit and leave. And to be even more exact in this leaving process, okay? And I don't care if you were two grown men, all right? I don't care. You're going to do one major thing. You're going to hold hands. Because you know as soon as you're not holding hands, the other person is going to vanish like everybody else has vanished in this damn town. And that's what you're going to do. Let's face it, that's the way you handle the situation. Better yet, you're driving through town and you don't see a soul anywhere. Just keep on driving. Don't even stop. You just go a little bit faster through town. That's what you do. You do that, you're probably going to make it out of the movie alive. Hang around and see what happened? Not good. Never a good thought. So, with that being said, hope you enjoyed that film. And tune in. I guess not really tune in. Listen onward as I will be reporting on these films.
Something inside her eyes. She's
you just heard Nimvid's That Girl track. All right, he is found all over the social media empire of the world. I mean, you name a site, he is on it. All right, so welcome to February. It's the 1st, and it's Wednesday, known as Hump Day to some people, and just, hey, it's Wednesday. All right, the film that I just seen was called It Happened at Nightmare Inn. Came out in 1973. Rated PG, an hour and 23 minutes long. And yes, obviously, it is an anniversary film marking 50 years. Horror, definitely. All right, this film was directed by Eugenio Martin. And he and also Antonio Foss were the writers. All right, so it stars the following people. And with the Google Translator as my assistant today, we'll get those names to you right now.
Judy Geeson, Aurora Bautista, Esperanza Roy, Victor Barrera, Lone Fleming.
All right, thank you, Google Translator. Without you, I would have been lost. The company that put out the film was Paramount Pictures. And it is... here's the summary. Two sisters running a small hotel in Spain kill female tourists whose morals do not meet their own strict religious standards. Hence the reason of calling me to play the song. That Girl definitely gives you a hint of, oh yeah, these sisters are a little bit on the nutty side. This film got a 5.7 out of 10 rating. Release date for it was February 1st in Spain. The film was submitted to the MPAA, a little trivia for you, in 1974 under the title Dread Stop at Nightmare Inn, and then was given a rating of PG. So just a matter of changing up the title, and whammo, look at that, you get around it. Now, I want to kind of give you a little background here, what my thought process of this movie. First of all, it's also known under two other titles. It's known under A Nightmare Hotel and also A Candle for the Devil. So there you guys go. It's got a, you know, got a couple titles to it. Now, how do I put this nicely? This movie is bizarre, but in a good bizarre. The actresses playing the crazy sisters do a stellar job of playing their really off-key... nutty is not a nice word, and crazy is not professional enough. How about just completely psychotic? Women with very different natural backgrounds, if you would. So they're not going to be the same, which I like. They're not going to be mirroring each other. They're going to have their own values, their own way of handling the situation. So that's very important. The film is grisly, no question. It's gothic, obviously, and deep essence of the movie. It's got some really vivid performances. I would say it is mysterious, without a doubt. And it's got some really choice, gruesome moments. Just things that you figure it's going to happen any moment, and it just what happens. It's just really great this way. And again, it's set in a small Spanish village where the two sisters run the modest hotel. And they do take exception to the influx of mini skirts or the, as they call them, hot painted dollies, meaning their makeup's a bit over the top. Murder seems a bit harsh. Right? But they are doing this because what they believe these guests are doing are abominations to the Lord. To have them have God on their side in the Catholic Church, anything can be justified. And that's, we've seen a lot of films where that is their way, that they have a certain type of mentality, a certain type of dulce on themselves, this their manifesto, if you would. This is how I believe, this is what I believe, therefore these people violated what I like, what my way should be, and since you violated this, I don't want to hear about your freedom, because your freedom only works if you do everything my way. And there's so many people out there who believe that, so this film definitely works in that category. Now, it is a film you can find on Tubi. So, that's really about all I want to tell you about the film. I don't want to tell you too much more. I mean, I really enjoyed it. But if I tell you any more, and I know if I do this, what's going to happen? You know what's going to happen. I'm going to give it away. I'm going to do it. It's going to happen. It's like saying you're watching Sleepaway Camp, and you know, you've never seen the film before, and somebody sits there rocking back and forth and goes, ooh, 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 you're going to love this part. And you're like, will you be quiet? We had somebody recently that never saw Sleepaway Camp. And they were guessing every different thing over the place. And all we're doing the entire time, the ones who had saw the movie before, sitting there going with, la, 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 la. We're not going to tell you anything. You're not getting it out of us, so just deal with it. We're not going to help you out. Just not going to work. So, yeah. You know, I'm trying to do the show a little bit faster, a little bit trying to pare it down. If, you know, one part when I was doing the show, certain films were taking 15 minutes to go through, and people were like, nah, just, even if you did 6 minutes or 3 minutes or 4 or 5 minutes on a film, fine. Show's short. Fine. Not a big deal. So, there you guys go. All right. I will be back to tell you more on, I guess that would be tomorrow. Welcome to February 2nd, Thursday, and you just heard Cadaver Club with the track Vampires Ain't What They Used to Be. So that kind of gives you a big hint of what the film is that I saw, or what really the film is about. In fact, that would be better if you were following along with the script, you already know. So anyway, so two films actually today. One was Winchester that came out in 2018, and also from 2018 is a film called Living Among Us. So, for all intents and purposes, I'm going to focus on Living Among Us. The particular film, actually, you've got a little information here you can find on Facebook. So, be aware of that. And, of course, we always put up, as on all these films, their Internet Movie Database links. All right. So this film is celebrating a five-year anniversary. It's a comedy horror fantasy film from director Brian A. Period Metcalf, who also wrote it. Starring, let's see here, Essam Blanco, Andrew Kagan, William Satter, Thomas Ian Nichols, and John Hurd. The company that put it out was Alamo Drafthouse. All right, summary is pretty lengthy here, so here we go. Hope you enjoy. Little by little, humankind has come to understand that vampirism is not only a real medical condition caused by the transmuting virus, but also that the dreaded bloodsuckers of fiction are living among us. However, in an attempt to publicly reconcile relations with species, between the species, I should say, the vampire's ambassadors embark in a daring media campaign to reassure the world that hunting mortals is so passe, that there are better ways to prove it than basically allowing for an in-depth expose that's definitely not ordinary in any way. And understanding that what they are is not ordinary either. So moving right along, we've got for such an important task, an intrepid three-member crew of documentarians is invited to spend a week in a typical vampire household. But a secret starts to slip out and the vampire's real intentions are coming to light. So, in other words, it could be a good splatter time. Or at least somebody's going to find out that climbing the corporate ladder is really the vampires are one type of bloodsuckers and executives are another type. Anyway, the film got a 5.3 out of 10, was officially released on February 2nd of 2018. There are only two taglines for the film, and they are, first, they always were. That's it. They always were. So I guess they're saying Living Among Us would be the movie title, and then they were playing off of that with There Always Were. So cute, but, you know, it could miss the point. And then the next one is No Ordinary Neighbors. All right. Okay. You could put down Who Are the Real Bloodsuckers? Five words. There you go. Because, you know, you have to say who's the real bloodsuckers, the people who are trying to get the video, the corporate executives, the actual vampires, you know, a lot of different ways to go with it, right? So, this film was actually filmed in 2013, but not released to 2018, making it the last film released starring John Hurd, who, of course, we all know passed away. My thoughts on the movie. You know, I went back and forth with this film a lot. I really did. I wanted to pull for it. I really, really wanted to pull for it. But it's clear early on that, you know, they're trying to mix both what we've seen in vampire movies with reality. And then we're also, you could tell they're in a high guarded position. They don't want them to know about a lot of aspects. So, it's a good story, but again, the third act in so many of these films just ruins it. Like, they didn't know what to do. They didn't have a clue. And if you don't know what to do, you want a piece of advice? You write your third act. You get it all done, and you're filming. And you get this part, and you realize, uh-oh, I don't know what to do really in my third act. I have the solution. Gather the crew together, gather the cast together, and said, you know what, we had an ending, and, well, the budget's been cut, and I need some input here. I need some thought. How do you think we should end the film? What should we do in our third act? What things should we accomplish in the third act? And you let the cast and crew definitely get into it. And who knows, that the cast, knowing their characters really well by now and knowing how they feel and everything, they might have a solution of what to do. And then there you go. It helps you. Now, basically, under the circumstances of the ceremony that occurs, why would you make that common knowledge? Why would you do that? Doing that, to me, is such a pivotal moment in the film. It's like a really big deal. So why would you make it, do this and be, like a believable moment? You wouldn't. And then saying, we're going to have this special ceremony in our house, but you can't come and see it. What? Wait a minute. Why are you doing it in your house? Even though, people may not, you mean you don't have the money, the place to have a bigger place, to have a location where you're more guarded than anything else? So, yeah, that to me is a little bit of problematic there. And secondly, the reasons for the film crew staying as long as they do in the house, for everything they're witnessing. All right, I'm not going to try to be a big spoiler here, but it doesn't make any sense. I mean, think about this, all right? Let's say you're doing a documentary on a family in a house, and somebody comes over, you film them, and then you never saw them leave. Never left. But you don't see them anywhere in the house either. Okay, that's problematic. So what we got going on here is that you're getting these weird invitations to see different things. You are you're seeing that these vampires are literally killing people. You can overhear the leaders conspiring to kill the crew that's in there. Why are you staying around? Leave! Just leave the house! I mean, isn't that hard? You gather all three, and you're saying, well, what about the equipment? The equipment's expensive. Screw the equipment. Screw it. Take the camera cards. Leave the equipment. And then you just say, you know what? We're just going to step outside. We want to think about our next shot, kind of maybe role play it a few times, get it kind of stood. Say, oh, why don't you do it up in the room? No, we've been up in the room so often now. We just want to get a little fresh air, go outside a little bit and get that. You're outside, you got the keys, you go to the car, screw the car, start walking, do something. Okay? But yeah, it's just like you hear somebody who's going to kill you, and they're downstairs, you're upstairs, and you hear this. Yeah, I'll stick around for a little bit longer. What the hell? Get the hell out of. You know what you're doing. All right, we can't get downstairs, get out the front door, so what am I going to do? I'm going to find a window in this damn house to get the hell out of here. All right, I'm going to use my phone. I'm going to do something. I'm going to figure a way out of here. I am not sticking around to figure out what's going to happen later. Forget it. Isn't going to happen. So, yeah, that's problematic for me. I mean, it doesn't make any sense why they keep staying and staying and staying. And the film, in a way, tries to go for the narrative and kind of falters into a found footage movie at that point. So, again, I'm like, oh, great. We're going to go back and forth on these two modes. So, just to be aware of that, okay? Good or bad, right or wrong, that's just how I feel about the film. I wanted more, and this is what I got. All right, it can be found on Freevee, which, again, from the Internet Movie Database, or Tubi. So enjoy or don't enjoy or watch or don't watch that movie. Total fraud! Okay, so it's actually here. God, I guess it's next Saturday morning. I've just finished watching both my Friday night movie and my Saturday one. And then when I'm all done this, I'll sit down and, believe it or not, I'll put the whole entire thing together, insert the music tracks, and show go off later tonight. So I'm actually going to talk about two movies. So here we go. First, I should mention that the track we played was from Grave Robber, with it being The Conjuring. I should say, welcome to the end of the week. Happy Friday to you all. It is February 3rd. The film was Cruise Into Terror, 1978 TV movie, 1 hour and 40 minutes long, a typical run length of a TV movie. This film is, what is it we got here, 45 years old. It's a thriller slash horror. The director is Bruce Kessler. The writer for it was Braverman, starring Dirk Benedict, Christopher George, Linda Day George, Joanne Harris, Frank Converse, John Forsythe, and Ray Milland. The film that the company that put it out was American Broadcasting Company, ABC. And also, a little note, a little nod, I guess, to the production company being Aaron Spelling Productions. Just to let you know, again, this film was released on February 3rd of 1978, which was, that's right, All Friday. It got 5 out of 10. In the summary, an Egyptian sarcophagus that is cargo on a pleasure cruise ship has a secret. It contains the son of Satan, and the effects start to make the ship passengers behave strangely. Ooh, wow, how nice for that. a little something different there, right? Look, it's a TV movie. What do you guys want? You just have to kind of deal with it. Now, if you're on the, if you're on the script for this on our site, you probably have already seen there's a link to the movie, so you guys will be able to watch that. Forgive me for being a little hesitant here in how I'm speaking. It has been a long day, and watching two films kind of back-to-back has been a little tiresome on me, so making a couple mistakes. I will not make this mistake next time. I will not do this trickery. Watch. I'll do something more, right? You always know it. Anyway, my opinion on the film. Well, you got to understand, this is really predating a lot of those 80s knife and kill type of flicks, right? So instead of having that, we're more into the possessions and the spiritualism that is occurring in the late 70s. And this was meant to be, you know, television horror. And it really makes a stretch of that. I would say it's more of a supernatural thriller. It kind of falls more of that. The horror is just a real big leap to try to go for. But, you know, that's what they try. The atmosphere is, it's there. There is a lot of suspicion, the fear among the passengers. Real basic on the shocks. What else? I guess you would say there's a few that will find the horror or the themes in this to be interesting. A lot of people are not going to like it. It's just not that that much of a thrill ride. Very little contemporary type of horror. But remember, it's 78, and it's television horror, and they don't do this anymore. This doesn't happen like this. So it's just something where you'll have to deal with it. But I mean, for the most part, I think it's, you know, it's an adequate movie. Is it fantastic? No. Is it going to rock your world? No. Is it entertaining? Yes. Could you fall asleep to it? Perhaps, depending on how tired you are, you might actually fall asleep. All right, so moving me into our second movie, which was the one I watched just now for Saturday morning. And finish out a week. But before I do that, I'm going to play a track here called Bloody Hammers. Welcome to the Horror Show.
while your heart is racing for the end of the strange conversations with the dying age. The frantic saint is missing, but inside you it's alright. It's okay, shock and shame are so far out of range. The blame is left on all of you to load your guns and tell the truth.
So, for the Saturday early morning movie, it was Videodrome from 1983, hence the Welcome to the Horror Show. No question about that with this movie, rated R, an hour and 27 minutes long, celebrating an anniversary, 40 years. The genres for this is horror, sci-fi, and thriller, with probably a sub-nod to body horror. No question about that either, that's definitely there. The director is David Cronenberg, writer David Cronenberg, starring James Woods, Leslie Carlson, Debbie Harra, Sonja Smits, and Peter Dvorsky. The company that put it out was Universal Studios. Summary. This is probably going to be the easiest part of this insanity. A programmer at a TV station that specializes in adult entertainment searches for the producers of a dangerous and bizarre broadcast. All right. Not bad. Pretty good. Pretty good. So this movie got a 7.2 out of 10. Release date for it was February 4th of 1983. Its budget was $5.9 million. It grossed only $2.1 million. However, since then, the film has gone to garnish a very large cult following. And this has also led to a lot of people giving this film a cult status right now. So it's a movie that definitely gets people's attention without a doubt. All right. Some taglines for you all to enjoy. Here we go. There's actually quite a few. I think there's six. From David Cronenberg, creator of Scanners. All right. You can use that as a throwaway. In this case, though, the movie does adhere to some of those tropes that is used, but it's not really, really necessary. First, it controlled her mind, then it destroyed her body. Long live the new flesh. All right. But it's all too long. Okay, it's way too long. Next is, first it controls your mind, then it destroys your body. All right, again, too long. Now, these next ones, I think, are better. They're shorter. They're just a little bit more emphasis. So here we go. A shocking new vision. Or a vision of enormous physical impact. Okay. Lastly, a terrifying new weapon. All right. Here's one I came up with. Have you seen your TV breathe? Right there. Think about that. Have you seen your TV, because TV is a real tiny word, breathe? I know it's a six words, but that TV is so tiny, you can squeeze that in there, breathe. Are you experiencing breathing TV? I mean, it makes you go, with my TV's breathing? Back then, you could get away with using the words TV on movie posters without there being some sort of woke backlash. And today, you probably couldn't do that. So, you know, be aware of that. All right. How do we go into this? Well, one of the trademarks to this film is David Cronenberg, long live the new flesh. And I'm for this. Personally, I believe in flesh. I do not usually say, hey, you know, you got a cut on your skin or something. No, you got a cut on your flesh. And the reason is people get flesh wounds. They don't get skin wounds. So you got a flesh wound. And people go with it, it's not flesh, it's skinned. Oh, you don't know anything yet. You haven't been enlightening. You have not gone to the realms of understanding through Videodrome. We shall help you. We shall give you the passkey and the code to understanding the new flesh. See? You can go totally nutty on this all. So, again, a little trivia about it. Now, there were three different endings that were filmed. The ending that was used in the film was James Woods' entire concept. So, there you go. So, now you know how this film can actually get itself worked out. Rick Baker and his small army of effects guys, an artist who had an average age of only 23. Ultimately, the effect became a collaboration between all three filmmakers, you know, to do the makeup, to do the physical and the video. And as Baker tells it, the assumption was that the special effects makeup artist could do anything the script called for, including some of the most craziest ass shit that they ever came up with. I mean, it was beyond bizarre. And imagine this. You are a special effects person, and somebody comes to you and says, listen, I got some thoughts. I need you to do them for me. And you sign up and you go with, I have no clue how I'm going to make this happen. I really don't know. And they sit there and they sit there and they work on it, whiteboard it, or, you know, pencil it or whatever else. They sit there and they try to figure it out. And they'll try again and again and again and again and again, because the last thing they want to do is get back the money, because it's never for the amount of money you gave. It's obviously bigger, so you got to deal with that. All right. The film did suffer from some cuts, actually, due to the studio executive who disliked sex toys and the ratings problems with the MPAA. All that cut footage was restored when the film had a video release done. So censors were existing both in the MPAA's offices and also right through the, I guess you would say through the MPA. Everybody wanted to take a swipe, a slice, and a dice out of this movie. And it's not really nice. That's why the flesh is always hurting in this movie. So be aware of that. Now, as for my my opinion, I should let you know this film was featured in Terror in the Isles in 1984. It is found on DVD and I believe also Blu-ray, so be aware of that too. And now for my opinion. how do I put this? This is a strange movie. It has an eerie, intense moment that lingers in there. The score from Howard Shore is definitely right on spot for this film. It might make you go a little mad. It may make you go a little bit crazy, but that's what you have to deal with, right? I mean, the Max, who's played by James Woods, is really obsessed with trying to achieve the ultimate tension in the film. And, it's just a bizarre movie. I'm sitting here, and I just saw it just a couple days ago, and I'm trying to process it all in my head. It is a surreal experience. I don't want to really tell you much because I don't want it to be ruined for the virgin viewers out there, people who have never seen it before. If you're familiar with Cronenberg's work, you already got an inkling of what's happening in this movie. If you've seen this movie, you definitely understand what's going on. The film, literally, I believe this thing made me the first movie to ever bring you right to the brink of having you go insane. And from scene to scene, there's going to be times you don't know what's going on. You don't know what's real and what's imagination. You don't know how it's being handled, what it's not. I mean, there's a lot that's happening. So just be aware of that, okay? Otherwise, that's really just going to bring us to a simple conclusion to our show. And with that, we're going to be playing... We're going to be playing Envenomed with the track Horror Movie, which is a Skyhooks tribute track. So enjoy that as we close out our show. We'll be back next week with another episode of Baron Crazy's Visions of Horror.
And I'll tell you something.